Hello, listeners, and welcome to TP Talks, PwC's Global Transfer Pricing podcast series. My name is Dana Hart, and I am pleased to welcome you to our next episode, The New World Tax System, What It Means for Your Company. Today's guest speakers include Will Morris, Georgia Maffini, and the host Ian Dykes. In this episode, Ian, Will, and Georgia will discuss where we are now and where we're heading with respect to the OECD's Global Tax Agreement. So with that, Ian, over to you to get the discussion started.
Welcome to this session. I'm Ian Dykes. I'm a transfer pricing partner from the UK. I'm joined today by Will Morris, who many of you will know. Will is a co-leader of PwC's Global Tax Policy Team. He's chair of business at OECD, and he's also the leader of our Digital Tax Study Group. I'm also joined by Georgia Maffini. Georgia is a senior economist at the OECD who led the digital taxes work through the BEPS sort of period. And I'm pleased to say she's now with PwC. And Georgia advises MNCs on the consequences for them of Pillars 1 and Pillar 2. And that's what we're talking about today, essentially. So before we start, I should say this is a big topic. It's technically complicated. It's politically very challenging, but most importantly, it's quite unpredictable. And obviously what we're going to do is try and make some predictions for you. That's particularly tricky at the moment because we're waiting in the next day or two for an announcement from the Inclusive Framework. And that announcement may well have more detail in. However, having said that, we don't expect it to really change the overall picture too much. So what we're going to do in this session, I'm going to come to you first, Will, to talk a little bit about where we are at the moment, and then I'll ask Georgia to give us a bit of a prediction as to where things might go next. Will, over to you.
Great, thank you very much, Ian, and I'm delighted to be here. And Georgia will tell you all the important stuff. I'll just give you a little bit of local colour. And you know, it does have to be said that exactly where we are depends on exactly who you are, because there are at least two different storylines here. One is of success, things moving forward, everything going great. And the other story is of the difficulties. I'll let the politicians tell you the first story. I'll dig a little into the second. So as Ian said, both Pillars 1 and Pillars 2 are very, very complicated. I think what's even more important at this stage is that they are very, very far, certainly in the case of Pillar 1 and to a certain extent in the case of Pillar 2, very far from being decided. I think we're really at the point now where, you know, they've just about agreed that they're going to build a building. The building is going to have walls. It'll probably have a roof. That's about all they've agreed. How many doors, how many windows, how many floors, you know, the color, all the rest of that stuff. No, they don't have that. And, you know, that could still prove to be slightly problematic. So let me just give you a couple of examples of where the sticking points are at the moment. Pillar one, the profit reallocation, has obviously moved a very long way from being about the digital economy. It's moved quite a long way from being about consumer-facing businesses, which is what we'd have been talking about this time, this point last year. What it is about now is about the roughly 100 largest companies, businesses, groups in the world over a number of thresholds, and then a profit reallocation away from them. And, you know, this has been done to make it more practical. What they've done in making it more practical is to reduce the amount of principal, discernible principal in it, almost down to nothing. And that means that making the rules actually becomes a lot harder because you don't know what you're aiming at. So what we see in Pillar 1 at the moment, apparently, is a big argument about which, firstly, jurisdictions it is that will end up surrendering tax revenue. That's aside from the question of who actually gains it, because there are two issues here. There's amount A, the reallocation on the basis of sales, but there is actually, how do you finance amount A? Where does that come from? And countries have very different views on this. The US has one set of views, apparently. They want a waterfall, which would be based on some return on assets, but tangible assets, not intangible assets, because you know every country is pursuing its self-interest here. Make no mistake about that. European countries in particular want a different way of looking at this. This is still very much in flux, but it's a huge issue. And even once you've looked at the jurisdictional issue, which jurisdictions is it that lose, then you have to bring that down to an entity level. And that, again, is where, you know, folks like us, folks like you, advisors, business people, actually have to figure out what this really means and how it's actually really going to work. So this question of surrender jurisdictions is really quite large. The scope has not yet really truly been sorted out. There were a number of sectors which were out of scope in the blueprint, which now may be back in it. There are subsectors, for example, they talked about natural resources in the blueprint. Now they're talking about extractives. That seems to imply less. It seems to mean more upstream. Again, where does that stand? Dispute resolution, huge issue. You know, they said, hey, the great news is we think that we can, you know, do this out, not just for Amount A, but outside of Amount A. And you're thinking, but how are you going to do it? How's that panel going to be constructed? Who's going to be on the dispute resolution panel? Winners and losers, keep coming back to that. Think about winners and losers. The winners will be just fine with the result. The losers won't. How do they appeal this? Where does it go to? How do you enforce, actually, that countries do what they say they're going to do? How do you prevent tax authorities from going off and doing something else? Then there's the issue about digital services taxes. What's going to happen with digital services taxes? It's going to be very hard to build that in to any treaty, which brings us to the treaty itself, which is meant to be open, you know, in 2023. But again, if you look at where they are in terms of constructing a tax treaty right now, they're talking about it as being as simple as the BEPS MLI, which wasn't terribly simple. But actually, we're now, if you think about it, we're talking about an instrument which has to undo other tax treaties. It has to change domestic law. It has to be ratified by countries' parliaments, who will be looking at what the revenue effects of this are. How do you build in the dispute resolution? Again, how do you make that enforceable? How do you build in the rates? How do you allow the rates to be changed? Okay, enough on pillar one. On pillar two, again, where do we stand? Well, it looks like, you know, it's a bit more together, in part because you have already this idea of, you know, the US guilty and what that looks like. We have a minimum tax in a large country. Pillar two is different from that in some important respects. And pillar two is also getting more generous in some important respects. So what we have, big issue is around the tax base itself, the calculation of the tax base. How do you do that? You break down the global financials. You break them down by country. Do you have to break them down by entity? In particular, what do you do about timing differences? Again, still undetermined. Some countries are fine with deferred tax accounting across the board. Others want to be much narrower with carry forwards. How does that work? We've never done it before. We've certainly never done it on a global basis. And this law, this pillar two, will be done actually by national legislation. So again, how do you enforce uniformity across that? How do you ensure consistent implementation? Even putting aside the issue of the tax base, you know, there are issues around what the safe harbors might look like. There's still quite a lot of flux around the so-called substance-based carve-outs. These carve-outs, which are meant to reflect real economic activity in a formulaic way, so focused on, again, tangible assets and on payroll, we see countries asking for, you know, much higher limits on this, much higher thresholds, which will allow the exclusion of much more income. You know, there are other questions also in relation to Pillar 2. So there's still a lot of movement. I have no doubt, this is my only prediction that I can say with absolute certainty, that by this time next week, we will have an agreement from the G20 based on whatever it is that the IF says or doesn't say. But, you know, there are still lots of countries jockeying for position. And to say that we then have, and this is where we hand over to George, to say that we then have to work on the details actually is inaccurate, because we're not talking about the details. They're only details in the sense that a roof and a wall makes a house. We actually have structural issues, architectural issues, like the windows and the doors, which are a big deal, which are still completely in flux and will need to be sorted out.
Thanks for that, Will. Well, right, it doesn't sound that straightforward, really, does it? And so, Georgia, yeah, you have the unenviable task of perhaps giving us a view of where this might go to. Over to you.
Thank you, Ian and Will, for leaving me with the most difficult task of this video. So we thought that despite having only a roof and a wall, we would reflect a little bit on how the transfer pricing world would look like after the introduction of Pillar 1 and Pillar 2. We will have to remain at a very high level, but we'll try to understand where these two parts of the OECD project can take us. If we first reflect on Pillar 1, Pillar 1 is clearly the most impactful part of the OECD work on transfer pricing. Why? Because we know it really changes the rules for profit allocation in a way that is quite revolutionary. So for a share of the system profit of a multinational, we no longer use transfer pricing rules, but we simply use a formula to calculate the famous amount A, and then we allocate that amount A to the market, meaning where the customers are, okay, without any reference to transfer pricing rules. So we know, so this is pretty revolutionary, and but we know that these new rules will apply only to less than 100 companies. Okay, so is everyone else safe? Probably not, because we think that Pillar 1 will really shape the expectations of tax authorities. How, first of all, the expectation will be that there will have to be more income in the markets. Why? Because this is really the core idea of Pillar 1. Also, the formula for amount A is designed so that profitable companies will have to allocate a larger share of their system profit to the market. Under some assumptions, for example, we have calculated that for a multinational with a profit margin of 15%, for example, amount A will correspond to 8% of system profit. But for a multinational with a higher profit margin, say 40%, amount A will be about 1/5 of system profit. So probably the expectations will be that more profitable firms will have to allocate relatively more to markets. Last point, last probably expectation, we think that amount A may be calculated with reference to consolidated accounting profit. So the third type of expectation could be that accounting figures, and in particular consolidated figures, are a key source of information when establishing how much income goes to market, essentially. And this is really new in the overall system of income allocation, really. And then we should also think about Pillar 2. We generally think that Pillar 2 is less relevant for transfer pricing purposes, but in fact, there are important consequences under Pillar 2 for transfer pricing. Because one of the many elements that drive the decision of where to allocate profit is generally the differential tax rate between the market jurisdiction, for example, and the jurisdiction of the principal, for example. Because Pillar 2 may increase the tax rate in, say, the jurisdiction of the principal to maybe 15%, at first sight, we might think that Pillar 2 reduces that tax differential, so it may reduce the advantage of some transfer pricing policies. This is at first sight only, because in reality, the effective tax rate in, say, the lower tax jurisdiction will be driven by other elements. For example, the substance-based carve-out. We don't know what they're going to be, but we might imagine that they are based on payrolls and on tangible assets. And then, so the more key decision makers from the transfer pricing perspective, the more substance then you have in a jurisdiction, the easier it will be to maintain, for example, the advantages really of a principal structure also under a Pillar 2 that increases the minimum effective tax rate. And then, of course, the tax differential is also determined by, for example, the tax rate in the market jurisdiction. And we know that there are some countries like the United Kingdom that have planned to increase their corporate tax rate. So you can imagine that the differential between a lower tax jurisdiction that just hits the 15% minimum rate and other market jurisdictions could remain large, and hence the advantages of some of our transfer pricing policies could still be available. In any case, we don't really know what will happen, so a very complex picture for transfer pricing also under Pillar 2, and there are really many elements that we will be able to evaluate only in the next few weeks and months.
Thanks, Georgia, and thanks to you, Will. So I hope that's given you a bit of a flavour of where things stand at the moment and some of the consequences that might follow. Thank you.
Ian, Georgia, and Will, thank you for your great insights today. I also want to thank our listeners. If you have any questions, please reach out to your regular PwC transfer pricing contact for immediate response. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.
This podcast is brought to you by PwC, all rights reserved. PwC refers to the U.S. member firm or one of its subsidiaries or affiliates and may sometimes refer to the PwC network. Each member firm is a separate legal entity. Please see www.pwc.com/structure for further details. This podcast is for general information purposes only and should not be used as a substitute for consultation with professional advisors.